I think we can expand the Deep Space Nine album to a double album.
Why don't you save that? Because we have no real
one. Oh, yeah. We have no news? What do you mean? We haven't recorded in weeks.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine documentary is out.
Oh, it is?
Doing showings, yeah. Apparently last night was the premiere.
I went with Adam Nimoy and Terry Farrell.
And then you hit
I sat in between them.
Then you hit Adam on the head with
both their hands.
Adam on the head with a sap and walked out with Terry.
I think Adam Nimoy is a pretty good scrapper, I would assume. All those years following the Grateful Dead, I'm sure they've toughened him up.
He followed the Grateful Dead?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. I've been to one Grateful Dead concert in my life.
Have you not seen For the Love of Spock?
Yeah, but I don't really remember. I'd have to go back and watch it again.
He and Leonard butted heads over that.
Yeah, I knew they had a bit of a falling out.
He wanted them to follow Credence.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine review program. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined by my usual assortment of cohorts. We have Jean Valjean Leyland.
Thank you, I think.
I don't know.
AKA Andy McGee.
Andy McGee, yeah. That voice you just heard is J. David Weider.
You wait. I'm leaving this show, and I'm going to join the Marquee.
If they'd have you.
Oh, you're going to feel that betrayal.
You better bring a loaf of bread with you. And then we have the very quiet Dr. Bill Robinson.
You know, this past week I met a guy named McGee, and it took everything I could to not tell him, don't make me angry, Mr. McGee. He wouldn't like
it. Why would you not do that?
I couldn't do it. I couldn't. Because he was young.
Totally,
because he was probably
that.
20 years my junior, and he wouldn't get the joke.
Exactly. You get the joke. All the more reason to do it, because it satisfies you. You just, at one point during the day, you just have to go, Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. And see, if he doesn't react, you can have a little internal moment of self-satisfaction that you just out-nerded somebody who doesn't give a shit.
Actually, maybe when we get to Star Trek news, I do have a story about just something just like that. But we'll save that for news.
Why did Bill Bixby never go up against Columbo?
He was never on. I don't know.
I'm trying to figure out if this has got a punchline to it or not.
No, yeah, it's okay. That just genuinely came to me. I've been watching Columbo with Adam, my son. He's really into it. He loves Columbo. And I'm just looking through all the guests. Oh, Pat. Oh, William Shaw. Oh, Leonard Nimoy. Why was Bill Bixby never in this show?
You know, it's funny because the first two that popped in my head, you mentioned Patrick McGoohan and William Shatner.
Mm-hmm. Well, William Shatner was on like every other week.
No, William Shatner only did two.
But did he show them every other week?
Yeah, well, yeah.
And Columbo, he catches Shatner because he left his thumbprint on the shell casing in the gun. He wiped down the whole gun, but he didn't wipe down the shell casing. And if I've spoiled that episode for you, sorry.
If he'd used a phaser, it wouldn't be a concern, would it?
That's right. It would not. Damn it!
I've never been the, you know, I've seen every episode and can recite dialogue person for Columbo, but I always enjoy that show. I just think it's just a fun show to watch all the time. And I think it's because it turned the convention on its ear, that you see who the killer is right from the start in every episode. And then you just wonder how, you know he's going to figure it out, obviously. And kind of, you know, as he's piecing it together, you can kind of see that he is. But you just wonder, how is he going to catch this person? And he just would always play it masterfully, even when he was like 70 and like way too old to be a detective and still playing the part.
Nah, just one more thing.
Oh, I always wondered how many of them actually got convictions in court.
Yeah, that's true. Probably, you know, I have never looked at it from that perspective, but in a lot of the cases, You know, he probably has convictions on all of them, because after he shows them the evidence that he probably can't get admitted into court, they always say, "All right, Columbo, you got me."
Yeah.
they always confess to it at the end.
Just like every episode of CSI. You got me. Here's what happened. Because we need to have this.
You never see them say, with that smug look on their face, "Yeah, just try and get a conviction on that crap." which would be actually a good way to end one or two of them.
Every now and then it works. Like, somebody will keep asking me a question again and again, and I'll stop and look at them and go, "Will you stop, Columbo and me, already? Enough."
Listen to The Lazy Eye, a Columbo podcast.
But anyway, Peter Falk was never in Star Trek, so...
And that's a shame. He should have been like a real stupid admiral who made them do something they shouldn't have done.
He sent him to the wrong sector because he was looking the wrong way.
him and Sammy Davis Jr. should have been on and like just bumping into each other.
You guys are in Starfleet Intelligence? You can't even find a room.
Hey, man. Lay off, cat.
Who can take a starship? Send it into space.
The Admiral Man can. The Admiral Man can, because he does. That's not my best set, Sammy.
So was it on Magnum where he appeared with the eye patch? Sammy Davis Jr.?
I think so, yeah.
So it was a conversation, even though people listening won't know it, the conversation has gone full circle. The student is now the master.
So do we have any
You're
Star
my brother,
Trek
Anakin!
And Paul is the chocolate monk. Somebody will get that.
Chocolate.
There's lots of filming going on. We've seen Rebecca Romijn as number one. Or Una. Whatever the hell her name is.
She's not Una.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is.
Number one is Una. Una and number one are two different people.
No, they're not.
What?
Isn't Una the blonde one from The Cage?
No, Una has been ascribed to number one. You're thinking of Human Cult.
Oh, okay. I'm confused.
So we've seen a photo of her. We've seen Captain Pike in a Discovery uniform. And one of those new short treks has dropped, but I've not seen it yet.
And, of course, we've seen the new Spock.
And we've seen the new Spock with a beard, which loads of people on Twitter went batshit crazy about for whatever reason.
Maybe he's from the
Mirror Universe. Yeah. And we've seen Patrick Stewart in the writer's room with all the writers working on his new Picard show, one of which was Michael Chabon.
Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
That's the guy.
You know what, though? The whole beard fiasco is a non-fiasco. If you're not gleaning from the trailers that Spock was at one time lost and has now been found, you're not picking up everything that's right in front of you, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's like every Twitter fiasco, Dave. It's all a non-fiasco.
Yes.
It's just so stupid. People get so they're panties in a bunch over the silliest things.
Yeah. Oh, God, the amount of think pieces on Captain Marvel punching an old woman. And you're like, oh, just fuck off.
She's obviously a Skrull. Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Context, people.
My favorite.
Spoilers, man.
Oh, my favorite was the people who watched the trailer and counted how many lines Brie Larson had.
What?
She's supposed to be the star of the movie, and she should have more lines than that. And I'm like, have you people ever seen a Clint Eastwood film?
I don't think it's nice you laughing.
Sorry.
Oh, very good. I nearly choked on my juice.
My dog gets the funny feeling you're laughing at him.
Now, if you apologize
like I know you're going to.
And
anybody who doesn't get that line, please seek out A Fistful of Dollars and watch it, because it's great.
It is. It's just showed up on Netflix.
There you go. We just got Netflix like 5,000 new subscribers.
I reckon so.
Anyway,
this is old news at the end of January, but the Deep Space Nine, What We Left Behind documentary has had its premiere, apparently.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. How do we get to watch this?
At this point, I'm not sure. I know they're doing theatrical screenings right now, but I assume it'll be video on demand and maybe DVD, Blu-ray. But I
love DS9, but I'm not paying money to see this.
Well, I was betting against it even coming out because it was crowdfunded, and then one of the draws to that was Adam Nimoy was involved, who's accomplished director to some extent, and then he drops out, and then it went like radio silence for months and months. I'm like, well, that fizzled out, didn't it? But nope, it's apparently very good. If the Twitter response is any,
is every indication not involved?
No, he's off doing his jazz albums.
Those are going to sell big.
Yeah.
Is he doing scat?
Put that right in the discount racks right next to Old Yellow Eyes' back.
What is Avery Brooks doing scat?
They're saying, stop doing scat, Avery. What do you mean I'm doing scat? I was just singing.
Well, according to the websites, the London, New York, and Los Angeles premieres are all sold out. So, oh well, never mind.
I didn't even get an invite. You'd think we would get invites.
You'd think that, wouldn't you?
You'd be wrong, but you'd think.
If we wore a Chewbacca mask, do you think we'd have got an invite?
Boom, we'd have to wear a Cardassian mask.
Even better. I could just put my thumbprint in the middle of your head and we're done.
Or just put to tape a spoon to my head.
That would be all level of makeup.
Yeah. Come here, Bill. Poof. Pow. There you go. You're done.
Why did you just super glue a spoon to my forehead, Andy?
Authenticity.
Your stuff doesn't come off, man.
Oh, it'll come off.
Weeks later, Bill's walking around with a spoon still on his head.
Trying to get through the airport screening, and I have to explain, all right, I do a podcast, and one of the guys thought it was funny, and he glued this spoon to my forehead. Can I get on the plane now? What do you mean I can't get on the plane? You're going to body cavity search me.
The thing is, he didn't think it was funny at all. He was trying to legitimately make you up to look like a contestant.
And then we'll sell it. We'll glue Dave's hands together, clasped. And then stick him to his forehead. And there you go. There's the second one.
I can't even
be. What we don't do for our art.
Oh, no. You would not get this level of commitment from anywhere else.
I hope not.
You don't get this at Mission Log, I'm telling you that.
Yeah. Yeah, but they get freebies and we get jackal.
They're probably invited to the premiere.
Yeah. Bastards.
Well, I got a good chuckle a few weeks ago. I was...
Was it watching this episode that we're supposed to be talking about?
No. I had arrived home, I pulled in my driveway, and with my work van, I backed... What?
Michael Editing was standing in your driveway.
Yeah.
He had rigged your garage so it would collapse on you.
Yeah. So I back into the driveway because I have a rather loud, obnoxious work van, so I don't, you know. So I'm backing in, and as I was, I saw some gentlemen walking up the street who are, you know, going about their religious duties, handing out,
You said duty.
So I see the comments, so I back in, so they can see me through the window of the van, and I'm trying to look like I'm busy, but man, they're just lingering. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna... So I get out of the van, and I'm like, oh, excuse me, sir, can we have a moment of time? I'm like, yeah. So, you know, they hand me a pamphlet. I open it. I flip through it. And they're like, well, do you have any questions? And it was like a light went off in my head. And I was like, so I close it and I look up to them and I go, why does God need a starship? And they just pause. What? I'm like, why does God need a starship? And they're like, you have a nice day, sir. And they walked away and I went inside the house. With a smile on my face. Thank you, William Shatner.
Sometimes I wonder if, like, if you were very, very receptive to them. Like, come in, sit down, have a cup of coffee. Like, how long would it take? If you just kept talking about non sequiturs, how long would it take before they'd say, all right, we got to go.
Or let me tell you about my Lord and Savior, Sirach.
Image of Sirach,
yeah. Because, yeah, anything else would be illogical. But there's no Vulcans in this episode, is there?
No, I don't think there are, because this episode is very illogical. Well, anyway.
So would that be?
That would be For the Uniform, Season 5, Episode 13.
Once they wore the same uniform.
Go ahead, shoot me.
Once they fought side by side.
Your ship is defenseless. I could destroy you right now.
Until an act of treason.
He betrayed your uniform!
Became an act of war.
And he beat me!
Now, how far will Sisko go?
It's not over between us!
To even the score on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Directed by Richard Lobel. Written by Peter Allen Fields.
Yay!
It originally aired on February 3rd, 1997. Dave, where were you on February 3rd, 1997?
I would have been probably going to bed and going to school for my second senior year. Long story.
Second senior year. It's like second breakfast.
Yeah. 11sies.
This one guest stars Kenneth Marshall as Michael Eddington, Eric Pierpont as Sanders, and Aaron Eisenberg as Nog.
Anybody know where Eric, what other sci-fi
Alien
Eric
Nation.
Pierpont?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm going to start punching the roof of my car right now.
Boom, 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 boom.
When you think Alien Nation, do you think James Caan or do you go right to the TV show?
Yeah. TV show.
Yeah.
James Conn is
seen in California's Mojave Desert 5 years ago. Our first look at the newcomer ship. Theirs was a slave ship bred to adapt in 1,000 different environments, but they washed ashore on Earth. And now the newcomers have become the latest addition to the population of Los Angeles.
You know what's weird is I always forget that that movie has James Conn in it.
Yeah, so I forget about the movie, to be honest with you.
Why do I remember that?
It's got Terrence Stamp, too. He's the over the, you know, when he...
That's it.
Yes,
I did not remember.
He's
that
the
at
guy
all.
At the end when he takes that drug and he cracks over his head and swallows it down,
right?
And swells up and is beating the crap out of James Conn. Sykes.
Oh yeah, I mean, think it was in the movie, wasn't he? Okay. Yeah. Anyway,
James Conn is yet another actor who I think is like way, way overrated in my mind. There's a couple of actors who, just on the basis of the fact that they were in The Godfather, which is like the greatest movie of all time, are considered to be great actors, and they're just not. James Caan and Al Pacino.
Oh my gosh. How can you say that? Al Pacino did great in Heat.
He did great in Heat, but he was also in Scarface, which, let's be honest, is a bag of shit.
He was in a lot of stuff that was a big shit. He's such an over-the-top emoter.
He is, but he's brilliantly over-the-top in that lawyer movie he did with Keanu Reeves where he's
a devil woman, yeah.
No, he wasn't.
He sucked. What was it? The Devil's Advocate?
Oh, Devil's Advocate.
Devil's Advocate.
Yeah, Son of a Woman. Okay.
Son of a Woman is the one where he won an Academy Award for overacting.
He won an award for dancing with Gabrielle Anwar. That's what he won an award for.
Yeah, because, that's been one of my pet peeves forever, where people said, he's blind, but he's doing the tango. And I always came back with, but Al Pacino can see. It's like, who cares that the character is blind?
But he pretended he was blind. Acting.
He was okay. I think he's a terrible actor, with the exception of the two Godfather movies and Dog Day Afternoon.
And Heat.
No.
Yeah, don't forget Heat.
No.
I'm sorry, but me and Dave are going to have to dogpile on you for an Is It Jaws to explain to you why Heat is magnificent.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to give you guys carte blanche. You do the episode of Heat without me, and I'll put it on the feed.
We're all right. We should get that one for one day when you're on holiday. Me and Dave should talk about Heat.
I think that's going to happen. Now that you've said it, I have it on recording. Andy, we'll talk.
Something for you all to look forward to or to avoid, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, for the uniform. Sisko encounters Michael Eddington, his former Starfleet security chief, who betrayed him and joined the Maquis. Obsessed with capturing the traitor, Sisko pursues him in the Defiant. But when Sisko gives the order to fire, the Defiant experiences a massive computer failure caused by Eddington. He leaves Sisko angry and humiliated and facing a long trip home. The Defiant is towed back to Deep Space Nine, and O'Brien begins the massive job of bringing the ship back online. Adding insult to injury, Sisko learns that Captain Sanders of the starship Malinche has been assigned to apprehend Eddington, since Starfleet feels Sisko hasn't himself been able to do the job in the past 8 months.
You sure he's not Colonel Sanders? Sorry.
But when he learns that Eddington attacked Cardassian colonies in the DMZ with a biogenic weapon, Sisko sees his chance. Despite the fact that the Defiant is not ready, he prepares to take his ship back into space. The ship lurches out of the station and soon encounters Eddington again, who taunts Sisko. The captain realizes too late that he was baited to false coordinates. As the crew sets off to find Eddington's real location, a distress call is received from the Malinche. Maquis forces ambushed and disabled the starship. Sisko determines Eddington's next planetary target, but it's too late to stop him from releasing his biogenic weapon into the atmosphere. The Defiant chases after Eddington's fleeing ship, but he cripples a transport vessel evacuating Cardassian citizens, forcing Sisko to break off his pursuit and rescue the poor, helpless Cardassians. Stumped as to how he's going to get Eddington, Sisko realizes that the Renegade sees himself as a noble hero and Sisko as a villain. In order to stop Eddington, Sisko breaks all Starfleet rules and acts like a moron. I mean, Sisko decides he must do something truly villainous.
Are you allowed to editorialize in the synopsis?
Bill does it all the time. I'm just doing what he did.
And I'm still picturing Colonel Sanders at the bridge of a starship, so thank you.
But now that everybody plays Colonel Sanders.
Set course for the next planet.
We're going to get some biscuits.
Buy the torpedoes, Mr. Worf.
Anybody likes Kentucky Fried Chicken, we could debate that later, because I hate that crap.
By the way, I think we have our image, or our episode title now.
Colonel Sanders?
Colonel Sanders.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
But now for the episode art, somebody has to Photoshop Colonel Sanders onto a starship, Anyway, Sisko prepares to poison the atmosphere of the Maquis colony in retaliation and reveals his sinister plan to all. Eddington is prepared to call his bluff. Sisko orders the deadly torpedoes launched, and the Maquis scramble to evacuate. Sisko says he's prepared to eliminate every Maquis colony in the DMZ, and Eddington, realizing Sisko is serious, does the heroic gesture of offering himself in exchange. Eddington is captured, and Sisko's vendetta is finally over. It's finally over, but we haven't seen any of the vendetta from when Eddington last left until now, because the 8 months that he was searching for him, he wasn't mentioned at all.
And a nice laugh at the end, even though Sisko really went over the line.
Oh, and also the fact that the entire bridge crew just blindly went along with his plan to poison the atmosphere of a planet.
We are going to
good
kill
little Starfleet
people.
Officers that just didn't say a word. Whatever.
I think I speak for all of us, Captain, when I say to hell with our orders.
Worf is looking at Sisko like, what the dude?
Yeah, that's a good...
It was great.
Like, you're a Klingon, dude. You can't stand up and say, Captain, I refuse. You, like, what?
Because he wouldn't do that. As a Klingon, you were in a situation where Sisko was actually quite justified in doing this. I'm not saying he was justified in going through with it. Kirk would have bluffed this. Exactly. Picard wouldn't have even countenanced doing this. But the fact that Picard Sisko was willing to... Yeah, Picard would have surrendered.
The
fact that Sisko was willing to do this, he's basically taking the fight that next step further. The Maquis have pushed and pushed and pushed, and Federation have done absolutely jack shit about it. He's not justified in his actions, but he's not completely unjustified either. Because sometimes you've just got to turn around and kick somebody's frigging ass.
But by doing so, he proved Eddington right from the beginning of the episode.
Yes, yes he did.
And we have this pyrrhic victory that at the end is just kind of laughed off.
Yeah, I mean,
in my opinion, Eddington...
These planets are just going to switch with each other. Everything's okay. Pat me on the back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're... Wash your hands of it. Oh, yeah. You live here. You live here. No problem. Status quo is maintained.
but it would not be in that situation if in the first place Starfleet hadn't said to them, yeah, those places that you've considered home for years, well, tough shit, that's Cardassian territory now.
And it all wouldn't have happened if Eddington wasn't all of a sudden all-powerful and could do everything to everybody.
I don't agree that he's all-powerful. I think he's had a number of months.
He can do nothing wrong.
He's had a number of... No. What he's doing is completely wrong.
He's coming from a place of wrong things.
Oh, you mean the fact that he can disable the Cafe Con Leche with butter?
He's had to think about how he's going to do this. He's had a long time to plan. He has the advantage that he knows Sisko's going to come after him. He has the advantage that he knows how the captain thinks. He has the advantage that he knows how Defiant works. Sisko has no advantage. He doesn't know what Eddington's going to do. Sisko has already been caught wrong-footed by Eddington in the first place. So he's on the back foot, essentially, through most of this episode.
They should have had a scene in there here where Eddington gets up in the morning and shaves and then puts on aftershave lotion, and when he has his hands on his face, he screams because it's like Home Alone.
It is not Home Alone.
And then they should have had one where Sisko walks onto the bridge and a can of paint swings and hits him in the head.
I don't think it... No. I don't have a problem with that. I think what's lost are two things. One, there's no acknowledgement that, hey, Sisko, you took on the enemy's tactics. And again, it's laugh off at the end. Like, I like when the bad guys win.
There's no repercussions from Starfleet.
Yeah, that bothers me.
Oh, you poisoned the planet? Okay, it's fine.
Why would there be repercussions from Starfleet in this particular instance?
It broke the rules of the Geneva Convention.
Is there a Geneva Convention?
Let's just look at that for a second. There's no Starfleet EPA, you know, that you poisoned the atmosphere. Okay, only for this type of life. There's going to be
thing. It's so convenient that I have a poison that only poisons Cardassians, but the Maquis people are okay in it. And I have another poison that only poisons Maquis, but the Cardassians are okay in it. Thank God I didn't accidentally switch the cans.
Well, that doesn't bother me because, I mean, you have, in real world, you have flea applications that will perfectly work fine for a dog, but you put that on a cat, it will kill it. So that didn't bother me. What bothered me was that Kira was largely quiet in this episode. You don't think she has something to say on this?
I actually think she'd be fully behind Sisko's actions here.
Mm-hmm. All right. Maybe the old Kira. I don't know about the new Kira.
The Maquis have at this point attacked two starships and poisoned a Cardassian world. They drew first blood. At what point are you willing to fight back?
They drew first blood!
Not me!
Well, you got to remember, though, Kira was originally supposed to be, what's her name? Ensign Roe, was a Maquis person. So, you know, she's supposed to be more sympathetic to the Maquis than anybody else on the crew.
But here's the thing. Here's what's missing. You have Dax over here kind of egging, not really egging Sisko on, but giving him good feedback. From one point of view, Kira could have been the other devil on the shoulder. You have a Kirk, Spock, McCoy thing. This should have been more of a struggle for Sisko. Do I become what Eddington has accused me of being? I don't, you know, it's not an easy decision.
I don't disagree with you that Kira could have been very good at giving an opposing viewpoint here and saying, is this entirely justifiable, what you're doing? And it would have been nice to have Sisko wrestle with it a little bit more. But I think we're long past that simply from the point of view that what we're doing here is very much, I mean, they spell it out for you. They're doing Les Miserables. They're doing Moby Dick again.
Yeah. Whack you over the head with Les
Miserables. They're doing Obsession. And there's that brilliant scene, or I think it's brilliant, in the middle of the episode where Sisko's punching the shit out of that punching bag because Eddington's got one over on him. And yes, it's not been mentioned in the intervening episodes because TV didn't do that back then. Nowadays, it would have been a continuing thread. But I think Brooks actually sells that this guy got under his skin. This one instance, this guy got to him, he got under his skin, he hit him where he lives. And that's bugging him. And should he perhaps have gone as far as he did as the supposedly all-magnificent, wonderful Starfleet, we never lie? Maybe not. But I don't think he's unjustifiable in tackling him with the same tactics before this gets worse. At the moment, the Maquis is just a scrabby little force that haven't really unified terribly well. And if he wants this to end now, he needs to nip it in the bud before they do become a serious threat.
So Eddington leaves Starfleet and immediately becomes the almighty emperor of the Maquis.
How do you know he was that beforehand? How do you know he wasn't running everything in that sector of the Maquis beforehand? Just because we didn't
see it. You could do that behind the scenes and not be caught. I mean, how stupid is Sisko at that point?
No,
I don't agree with that. I think Eddington is exceptionally good at what he's doing because he is a Starfleet officer who has seen the other side.
All right, I've had enough. I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit here. I watched this episode, and I thought it was one of the best episodes ever on the series. And then Andy texted us all and said, oh, this is a great episode. So I just felt the need to poke the bear a little bit, and I was like, I don't think so.
I was going to say, you're taking umbrage with things that, I mean, my umbrage were the two things that I mentioned, because the cast was superb, especially the moment Sisko's like, yeah, we're going to do this. And they're like, whoa, dude.
Well, I decided I was going to play the part of the guy who didn't like the episode. I told Bill from the start that I was doing this. And I said, I'm going to do some arguments to try and say, oh, this sucked because of whatever. But I've had enough. I'm admitting now. I love this episode. I think it was great. I just wanted to give some arguments.
I love the episode, but I think it's not everything it could be because it did that jokey ending. It bugs me so much. And it stayed with me that this could have been high drama. You have Avery Brooks in his high. I mean, he's superb in this episode. But
yeah, I thought he was great. I loved actually the stuff that Eddington does to him to tweet him all the time. I love that he calls him Javert. I just think it was so cool. I do agree with some of the arguments I made. I mean, I had to try and actually find some things to try and say, oh, this is a weakness. I do think that it would have been much stronger if they had shown Sisko's frustration over the time since Eddington left, because he hasn't really been mentioned at all since then. But I agree with Andy that back then they didn't really do that so much on episodic television. But, Eddington was just a little too prepared for everything, but it was all right. I didn't really have a problem with that. I kind of like the fact that, okay, he had time to totally prepare for Sisko and everything Sisko's going to do. So he had all these things in a row. So they say, okay, we're going to send the Malinche after him. And he treated the Malinche like it was his bitch. He just turned him. It took him like nothing to get rid of that ship. You know, I did enjoy that whole thing. And I did actually enjoy the dilemma of or the psychological warfare of he had to put Eddington in a position to feel he was heroic by surrendering. Because he knew he wasn't going to outthink him right now, or at least not in time. You know, he would have to plan it out.
He played to his ego.
Yeah.
Well, at the same time, with what he's doing, he's easily made him a martyr for the cause. Because, I mean, yes, there's no EPA in Starfleet. I assume there's something like that. But we know there's PR. and something like this is a PR nightmare. You mean this Starfleet captain, in order to catch the Maquis, adopts the Maquis' methods?
Yeah.
But that's where they had to throw the little twist at the end. Oh, it's okay. They could just switch planets, because they had to make it so that he didn't really cause any lasting damage. Yeah, you want to make this a truly, you know, monumental episode. All those Maquis people are dead now. And then you start saying, okay, well, that was a pretty big thing.
But again, he's basically, Eddington brings Sisko down at the beginning and says, here's all the things that, this is how Starfleet's an asshole. And then Sisko, in the course of trying to capture him, makes that prophecy come true. So now the Maquis cause is going to be emboldened that, yes, the Starfleet really is oppressive, and we need to focus more on them. Does that play out in the series? A little.
But the Maquis are also a very small group, really. And as will be seen in the not-too-distant future, the Cardassians become more there's a more clear enemy relationship between Starfleet and the Cardassians coming up in the not-too-distant future anyway. So the Maquis' tactics are going to be more accepted by Starfleet.
Foreshadowing?
So, you know, you could throw that into the picture as well, that the events to come are going to make it so that the Maquis really just become less of a concern.
I think it's the events to come that are staying with me, and I don't want to spoil too much, but in Pale Moonlight, that kind of psychological turmoil should be where Sisko is with this, that, hey, I've become that which I hunt. And that's, again, it's like the ultimate computer. Terrible, terrible catastrophe, and it's laughed off at the end of the episode. And that bothers me. It's like, you were so close to a great episode, and then you had to blow it with that cheeky little ending. I like it when the bad guy wins. Oh!
He's so smug, too.
Yeah. Jadzia should know better, that, you know, this is crossing a line, and there's really no going back from this in a lot of ways. Like, this is something
that was probably a remnant of that serial killer persona she had buried in there.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Maybe. It's just this, she shouldn't be so accepting, and neither should Sisko. I mean, you've taken out a ship that isn't ready for flight. You have this crew. I mean, there's no communications. They have to have Nog try to communicate with everybody.
That is great.
Cool. Yeah.
I thought that was really good, especially when Nog imitates the intonation of the person giving the order as well. Mm-hmm. He really shouldn't be talking to Chief O'Brien like he is, but because it's an order from Sisko, he gets to give him total shit. It's brilliant.
It's a nice way to use Nog as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you've got this broken ship, this crew that's going along with it up to a point. And then you ask them to commit an act of, it's terrorism, it's called.
Once
it
an
is.
Act of war.
And they're looking, and how is that crew going to trust Sisko now? Because they were all shocked. Like, you're really going to do this? He crossed a line, and that's good drama. I was fine with that as a piece of good drama until they didn't do anything with it.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I do have another nitpick.
Pick some nits, Bill. Pick them.
Well, which is what caused me to rewatch the episode again last night, because I wanted to make sure I had my facts straight. Okay, so he unleashes the Cascade Virus, Eddington, into the Defiant, wipes the computer core. They have to reprogram everything. So certain systems are online, other ones are not. You know, so they've got phasers. At one point they say, well, you know, it's going to be hard to target things, blah, blah, blah. We're not sure what we might hit. So in the scene after Eddington has attack the Cardassian transport ship, and it's got 2 minutes before it falls into the atmosphere of the planet. Now, they've already blown up one of the Maquis raiders, or it appeared to explode, at least when I rewatched it. You know, they, you know, take the one on the left, boom, and it explodes on screen. So obviously there's no problem with the phasers. They got that one. Now, they say, we've got 2 minutes to save this freighter. Hey, let's pause and take an incoming transmission from Eddington, talk to him for a few minutes, and then decide, oh, we can't go after him because we just don't have the time. And then when they cut away and show the Defiant, it is literally, because this is why I rewatched, it is literally behind the Maquis Raider. I just so much wanted, again, going back to Star Trek V, I wanted to be Kirk and go, shoot him! Why are you talking to him? This whole thing could have been averted. You wouldn't have to have poisoned an atmosphere of a planet if you had just shot him right then and there. But again, I'm looking at it tactically. If I was captain, they would have been done. I would have just, like, we're getting a transmission. Shoot him.
So
I don't care.
Captain,
shoot him.
Captain, they would have
disable
been
done him. So. Yeah. Disable him, and then we'll go after the freighter. You know, it's like you. It would be different if they showed a shot where they were further away, but they were literally right. The Defiant was literally right behind them. I would, that just ticked me off. But
But other than that, it was a good episode. Yeah, I was kind of in on the whole thing with Paul's, like he said.
I think you've kind of ruined the whole episode now. That you've, well, it's kind of like Star Trek 2009, that if Nero had found out, oh, we're well before Romulus has imploded, why don't I just tell the planet and the Starfleet and we can fix this now? Hey, we even have red matter. We got this. Suddenly you realize that movie's completely redundant.
Another dunsel.
So, should we talk about the new community? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. So, if, as I was watching Eddington, I was thinking, all right, if we were to recast this today, who would I cast instead of Mr. Marshall? And my pick would be Benedict Cumberbatch, not Colonel Sanders.
Benedict Cumberbatch. So, you're trying to go for the Into Darkness feeling.
You know, but I, as an actor with the mannerisms, not with the Into Darkness feel, because let's not just go there. I don't want to get that angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
I'm going to be the controversial one and say I quite enjoy Into Darkness. Separated from the ad campaign that told us this is not Khan. No, no, he's not Khan. Bullshit. I know he's Khan. Don't lie to me.
He didn't need to be Khan at all.
No.
He could just
Are we going there again?
Okay, sorry. Yeah, we've done both. Bill and I are going to be doing an Into Darkness special soon.
He wasn't Blofeld either.
He's talking about Spectre.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Those of you not in the James Bond know. Yeah, there was another one where they kind of just should have said it.
Was Benedict Cumberbatch not... Oh, I got it now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was the same thing where I caught up to you, Dave. Dave and I are like, what? Huh? What?
The claw.
Like I said, I really thought this was good. Now I made my arguments purposely to try and argue why it wasn't. And now, Dave, you're bringing me down by giving me real arguments.
I've been stewing for this for a while. So,
I get everything you're saying, and I realize they did take a couple of shortcuts here as far as Starfleet goes. But I'm okay with it. It didn't bother me. I think what they had to do, they didn't hide the fact that they were doing Les Miserables, which, for anybody who doesn't know, is French for the miserables. Right? Go figure. It's so, they hit you over the head with it. It's so blatant. But, they come right out and say it. It's beyond hitting you over the head. It's as if they put one of those exploding cigars in your mouth.
But that actually, because they said that, it didn't bother me. Because they said, yes, we're reenacting this, and the themes were made clear, and the characters were aware of it. It didn't bother me as much as it could have.
You know what's funny is I've seen actually Les Miserables on Broadway.
Not on Broadway, but I've seen the musical. Sorry,
I had seen this first. I like this better. usually when you're redoing a classic thing, usually the original is the better thing. But in this instance, I like this one better. I wasn't bothered by the fact that they kind of had to force it all in. I would have preferred that they had developed this over time. I think it would have been better if they had dedicated two episodes to this. If you had an episode now where he's, having the battle of wits with Eddington, and Eddington keeps defeating him, and that's the episode. Then we move on, and maybe early next season you have this episode. And you don't even have to have been mentioning it in between. You could just have, just mention that he's been stewing over this for a year or whatever. And all of a sudden it just becomes so much more powerful. Plus, just having an episode in there where he's just defeated and there is no resolution would have been just very, very cool. But I guess they didn't want to dedicate two episodes to it.
Not with what's coming, no.
Yeah, that's true, too. Well, maybe they needed to do this one. I mean, obviously, they knew they were going to do this from the point when Eddington came on the show. So they could have timed it out to have had the previous episode where he keeps losing, the end of last season.
Well, this could have actually benefited from being a two-parter. I think it had enough weight in its concept that they could have stretched it out without milking it dry.
Yeah, but I would like it to be a two-parter that isn't shown on consecutive weeks.
Oh, I can see that.
Have it a two-parter with a stretch of time in between, just to show how long this has been bothering Sisko and how it's been eating away at him, to create more of that Les Miserables feel. Instead, we have the episode where he turns traitor, and then we wait 8 months, and then we have this episode. That's it. I would have liked to have had one more in between.
More scenes of Sisko punching a bag, speaking in...
And at some point he should have said, he tests me, but I shall have it.
I was wondering, do you think this is a leftover concept from Next Gen from when Ro Laren defected to the Maquis?
No, they couldn't have done this story on Next Generation. Certainly not in this configuration at all. Picard's too straight-laced to even attempt to think about doing this.
Why not? Picard's French.
I don't think they pictured this story, but I do think they pictured Ro Laren defecting and it being something that ate away at Picard. So I think the seed for this story may have been planted back then.
See, I picture it more Riker getting eaten up because they had developed that that interesting contentious relationship, pseudo-romantic, will they, won't they? And then she just ditches. And I think that would eat Riker more than Picard. And I think Riker would maybe pull a Sisko.
But Riker possibly would have, because it may have contributed to making him a mildly interesting character. But if he does, he's not the captain, and then Picard's got to boot him into the brig.
Which would have been cool.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of like the concept when they were going to kill Riker.
Send your smug face right into jail.
But didn't he actually get it on with her when they... the episode where they all lost their memories?
Yes. At least it's heavily implied. But I didn't know you guys hated Riker.
I don't hate Riker. You know what bothered me? You'd have to go back to figure out which episode it was. But when he played his own transporter-created twin brother?
Thomas.
Thomas. In that episode on this series, when he just walks onto the screen and he does his Tom Cruise smile and everybody's supposed to just go, you know, swoon, that really bothered me. That was the smug face that I'm talking about.
He's jealous.
Oh, sorry. I don't hate Riker, and I love Jonathan Frakes, because lots of people can't make the distinction between actor and character. None of you guys, obviously. My problem with Riker is he's a horrible officer. You get this impression that he shags his way through the crew, he's nice to everyone who shags him, he's nice to his friends to the point of letting them flagrantly disobey orders. He constantly disobeys orders himself, but God forbid anyone under his command acts that same way. And he's an utter twat to anyone who isn't in his circle of friends. He's a terrible officer.
Mm. But tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, to hold back.
Actually, I'm still confused. Who's Jonathan Frakes?
I kind of feel like they went, and I don't know why we're down this rabbit hole right now, but I feel like they went off of where they were supposed to go with Riker. You know, he was supposed to be the action part of Captain Kirk, so that
I'm Captain Kirk.
So that Picard wouldn't have to go on away missions or whatever. But then, like, as the series went on, they were like, yeah, we'll send Picard on away missions. It's fine.
Yeah, and they actually realized that Patrick Stewart, you know, was in pretty good shape and could handle action scenes himself.
He could also tango, apparently.
Yes.
and he could see.
Yes. And in one of the greatest ironies, Patrick Stewart became a bigger sex symbol, so go figure.
But he wasn't married to Laura of Luke and Laura fame.
Think of Laura.
I think Patrick Stewart did okay for himself.
What, with Ian McKellen?
No.
What's wrong with Ian McKellen?
Yeah,
nothing at all. But you know what? Anytime I see Patrick Stewart in a non-acting moment, he's always hanging out with Ian McKellen.
Yeah, and they're great together.
When I see Jonathan Frakes in a non-acting moment, he's with Jeannie Francis. I'm more jealous of Jonathan Frakes.
Who's Patrick Stewart? Is he married?
I think he may be.
He is. He's married to a woman named Sunny.
But he's always
Sunny.
Him and Ian McKellen are like best buds.
Yeah, they are, and I would love to hang with them. That's on my bucket list.
They were on Broadway, not performing. I think they went to a show together, and they were hanging out on Broadway, like meeting fans and doing stuff. The two of them actually are very, very cool.
Yes.
Wow, that's his wife?
Yeah, I told you, he did all right for himself. Patrick Stewart's not hurting in the romance department, guys.
Wait a minute. Is that his daughter or his wife?
it's hard to tell with Hollywood.
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry.
We've gone way down the rabbit hole, and I think I took us there.
Did you ever see when Patrick Stewart was on Extras?
Yes, I've seen it all. I've seen everything.
he's got a script, and all his script is all about how his character gets the power to make people's clothes come off. and he's got, like, there's no plot to it. There's no, no storyline. It's just, I see this person, and I make the clothes all come off.
They tried to put it on, but by then I've seen everything. And he's like, I'm a James Bond type. I rescue all these women who've been enslaved, and they have no clothes on. So I've seen everything.
Yeah, that's his finishing comment to everything. But I've already seen everything. If you haven't seen that, you should check it out on YouTube. It's just a very funny scene.
And also check out, if you can find it, the SNL skit where Patrick Stewart ran an erotic bakery.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I'm going to need to see that.
An erotic bakery.
Yes.
Respect the cruller and tame the donut.
It's all they do is make cakes of a woman peeing on people. And his defense is, I don't think you understand. This is an erotic bakery.
Oh, and Patrick Stewart's married to a woman in her 30s.
Good for him.
40s.
No, she was born 1970. Well, she just turned 40. No, she's going to turn 40 in December.
Uh-huh.
She's born in 1978.
So she, by the time you hear this, she would have turned 40. Time travel's weird.
Yeah, so Andy will be correct and I will be wrong by the time this airs, from a certain point of view.
I assume we viewed a Deep Space Nine episode that we forgot to talk about some more.
Okay, what do you got?
I think I'm tapped.
All right, so you know what would be interesting then is to know what would Blaine say. Bill?
I don't know what Blaine says.
Do you have a song? Blaine says, "Hi guys, ladies and gentlemen, we have an episode of Star Trek that can only happen on Deep Space Nine. This wouldn't fit into any other Trek. For some, it may even be a reason to walk away from DS9 and not come back.
Ooh.
To some degree, it does feel like setting up Eddington for a role later on, just like previous episodes this season that felt like they were just positioning characters. But it's riveting, so it's entirely forgivable. Sisko's conscious choice to become the villain is something I can't imagine coming from any previous captain. Janeway would get there too, but she wasn't there when this hit the air. We're really starting to feel the consequences of war. It's getting harder and harder to watch one episode and then stop each day. Blaine." Yeah, I agree. It is hard to stop watching if you have the time. But, you know, I don't see anybody walking away from the series based on this. Whether you agree with Sisko's actions or not, I think it necessarily had to be resolved quickly as far as his making the decision to be the villain and all. But it adds dimension to his character that he's willing to go over certain lines. I don't think that makes me want to go away. I think it makes me want to view him more because he isn't a two-dimensional, you know, goody-two-shoes guy.
But he shrugs off going off over that line at the end of the episode. I'm just going to beat that dead horse. Yeah.
I'm going to just keep doing that.
Boop-boop-be-doop. Star Trek.
Oh. You know, there was one other nitpick I had that I just remembered.
There's another.
So he fires the torpedoes at the planet, blah, 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 Solus 2 or whatever, right? Then he says, "Set course for the next planet, Trakken, whatever." You know, and, you know, he's like, set course at warp 6. And then he's saying, "Ready the torpedoes." Warp is like, "Ready torpedoes 3 and 4, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, "Prepare to fire." I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. How close were these two planets to each other? Like, you're suddenly already there? You see what I'm saying? He just fired two torpedoes. I mean, maybe these planets were, like, you got to go warp.
In the same star, in the same solar system.
I don't know.
Well, they'd have to be close. If he did choose warp 6, then that's not a big distance.
What if he, like, overshot it? Whoops.
Then the navigator's fired.
Yeah.
He's 39 years older than her. He's two of her.
You're still obsessed with Patrick Stewart's wife.
Yes.
When you've got money and you're Patrick Stewart, doors open easily.
I've got money.
He's probably taking her out and doing a tango every night. Or what was it, like a rumba or a samba or something that he did like while he was getting ready to go down to the...
It was a tango.
The planet insurrection. No, an insurrection, it was not a tango.
That was a tango.
It was not a tango. The music was too bubbly.
Mm. Now I need to watch. Okay, I'm going to rewatch Insurrection. We'll continue this discussion. Or we'll just get somebody who knows what dances are. I know nothing about dance, so I'm going to assume it's a tango. Because I can't stand to be wrong.
It's a mambo.
Oh, well, mambo. Okay, I can accept that. I can accept being wrong.
Carlos taught us to do the mambo.
Was that mambo number 5?
Oh, and that's where I'm done.
So anyway, Lou Vega, what's your rating?
Okay, I'm first on the rating group here for this one, since this was my episode. I'm kind of glad we were able to discuss it and come up with some negatives on it, but I don't feel like any of them truly impacted my ability to enjoy the show at all. I really was pretty much riveted to my TV set from the minute it went on to the minute it ended. I don't think it's perfect, and I think we were able to point out some things that weren't perfect, and I'm kind of torn between a 4 and a 4.5, and if I was Bill, I would do a 4.25. But I'm not Bill, so I'm going to do a 4.5.
I'm not too far off from where you are. My only argument, I mean, I'm kind of going back and forth between a 4 and a 4.5, but I think one of my nitpicks is that it didn't have any repercussion that put Sisko across the line. But There was also no repercussion when Picard became Locutus. So I can't really argue with that. I'll go with a 4.5.
Yeah, but he didn't become Locutus by choice. That's...
But after season 4, episode 1, everything was fine again. Fine and dandy. He's back in command. No.
You had two times of repercussions, just to correct that. You had the next episode, Family, where he had PTSD from it. And then in First Contact. They retconned it to he was unstable.
Yeah, but that's my problem with First Contact, that they had to do a massive retcon to make that film work. I, Borg, can't happen in the same continuity that First Contact happens.
And yet it does.
And yet it does. So. Mm.
Well, since I am Bill...
I, Bill.
I, Bill.
Yeah, you are the compliment.
We are the Bill. We will absorb your food into our own.
I am Bill of Bill.
I am one of one.
From this moment forward, you will serve me my food.
You will serve the Bill.
We live for the Bill. We die for the Bill.
Ketchup is futile. Anyway, yes, the acting is excellent, and this has got multiple rewatchability. As I've watched this, preparing for this, I think, three or four times. Of course, we've had about 6 weeks in between the last time we recorded, so that was one of the reasons for the multiple viewings. But it didn't drag on. It was quick. I really loved Avery Brooks. You shut your mouth, because you said something earlier that your wife said, and I was going to say something, but I was nice, so you just shut up, you.
Why stop being nice now?
Yeah, it's true. Never mind. I'm not done. I didn't give the number.
Oh, okay. All right. Jesus.
we have had enough of you.
I'm giving it 4.25 bills.
I was really hoping you were going to go 2.5 buckets of KFC.
Yes.
Extra crispy.
I was 5 for a long time. I thought this was a blinding episode. I thought it was everything that Deep Space Nine is that the other shows aren't. I think it justifies its place in the canon by not being just a clone of any other show. I think it's proved incredibly influential on stuff like Battlestar Galactica. However, in conversation, Dave has managed to convince me that, yes, that ending is a bit off and a little bit more of a debate. Even if Sisko only had that debate with himself about whether or not this was the right thing to do, would have added to the show. So I have also gone 4.5.
So we brought you down.
Yes. As you often do, let's be honest.
Just by being us. Sometimes Andy wakes up like, those bastards are out there.
Over going hanging with the boys.
And if I were Chris Christopherson, I'd say, don't let the bastards bring you down. But I'm not Chris Christopherson.
Be a whole lot.
And this is not a Chris Christopherson podcast.
And I am not Ernest Borgnine. And Dave is not Ali McGraw.
Ooh, well. One
and
out of
I am
three
not Bill Robinson.
Bad.
Wait, I am Bill Robinson. Never
You're
mind.
The Bill.
I am the Bill.
We just made a Convoy reference. Guess who that's we getting did. Slipped in here? We got a great big convoy running through the night.
We got a great big Bill Voy running through.
Or you could play it that Paul is not Burt Reynolds. I am not Sally Field. And Andrew is not Jackie Gleason.
What am I, the dog?
No, you'd get to be Cletus, you jabby bastard.
I was
going to
say, you'd be Jerry Reed.
Oh, okay. Oh, I forgot about Jerry Reed.
How can you forget about Jerry Reed?
I know, he only did the title song, so.
Never forget the snowman.
Speaking of songs, I had an idea driving home yesterday for a. Because there was a song on the radio, and it was Billy Joel, Moving Out, and it made me, I just came up, of course all I ever come up with is the opening line to a song, so.
You don't follow through like I do, mate.
Opening line is, Eddington works at the security store, saving his phases for someday. That's pretty much it. And then the tagline would be, I'm marquee-ing out. That's not quite as good as Andy's.
Well, I also came up with, hailing frequencies open, all power to shields.
What shields?
I don't think these pesky Romulans will yield. But that's as far as I got with that as well.
So
yeah, so I think we're up to a Deep Space Nine double album now.
The double live.
With bonus Star Wars song.
Going on tour.
Yeah.
Oh, can we tour this?
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. So
we
far,
would sell out small songs. Clubs. Because it's not going to be a stadium, that's for
we
sure.
We can be Clouds on the Moon or whatever that shitty band is in Big Bang Theory.
What would our band name be? Listen to the Prophets?
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I see no problem with it.
Mm. Get the t-shirts made, man.
So what's happening next time?
We do have people who listen who have artistic ability. There's no reason they can't somehow create this for us.
That was a noble attempt, Dev.
My back teeth are moving. I'm like, we gotta wrap up this episode because I'm gonna piss myself.
Next time on an all new episode, Listen to the Prophets. It's part two. No, it isn't. It's part one of a 2-part story. Should I say that again?
No.
No. Oh, it's in Purgatory's shadow.
They knew this day would come.
Want you back here in one piece?
They thought they would be prepared for it.
They are coming right at us.
Try to shake us loose.
They were wrong.
There are at least 50 Dominion ships headed our way.
Right now, there's no way we can beat the Dominion.
Weapons ready.
The wormhole's opening. The Dominion. They're coming.
God help us all.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Whatever.
It's better, you know, if we're too perfect, then people aren't going to love us.
Yeah. I don't think that people are.
And you already have you already have me on board to skew us more towards perfect.
All right, well, that's next time. Ta-ra.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Kapla.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
All right, I gotta pee.
I gotta make
Do we want to just let's not disconnect.
I gotta make pee.
I don't trust what the internet right now. We've got a good connection.
Oh, so you don't want to end it?
No, don't. Do not end it. Do not abort the ending. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Okay.
I, of course, I broke away and used the restroom earlier because I could not wait. I was eyeing up my racetrack cup and decided, no, I will be a human being and use the restroom. I have said too much. Am I by myself? I am the Bill. I'm by myself. Dave will enjoy this later. All by myself.